What are some non-clinical careers that physicians can pursue either without a residency or just after residency? Learn the answers to this question and many more on this episode of the Talk to Me Doc podcast.
Welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast, where it's all about serving the early career physician. Let's talk about the unique issues that face us so we can create a better future for ourselves and those to come. And now your host, Dr. Andrew Tisser.
Hey everybody, it's Andrew, and welcome to the Talk to Me Doc podcast. I'm so happy you're here. For my returning listeners, thank you so much. For my new listeners, welcome. Because today, like on every episode, I'm bringing you the best guests from all around healthcare and beyond to discuss issues relating to the early career physician. Today, I'd like to welcome back one of my personal mentors, Dr. John Jerica. John Jerica is a family physician who began doing non-clinical side jobs early in his career. He started as a part-time physician advisor and medical director, and subsequently worked as a hospital chief medical officer for 14 years. He left his CMO position to partner in an urgent care startup in 2014, where he continues to serve as co-owner and medical director. In 2017, John started producing the weekly Physician Non-Clinical Careers podcast, where he presents interviews with physicians in unconventional careers and experts in physician career transition. In 2018, he created the Non-Clinical Career Academy, nonclinicalcareeracademy.com, an online educational platform. John and Dr. Tom Davis recently launched NewScript, an online community of healthcare professionals, career transition mentors, and wellness specialists helping each other live a better life. It is a private, uncensored, and ad-free space that incorporates a forum, daily posts, mentorship programs, online courses, and live stream events. It can be found at newscript.app. All right, let's welcome John back onto the show. Dr. John Jerica, welcome back for the third time to the Talk to Me Doc podcast.
Hi, Andrew. I'm very happy to be back here today. It's been a while.
It has been a while, and you have been busy. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But for those who didn't listen to your first two episodes, although I really would recommend going back and listening to them, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I'm a family physician. Basically, over time, my entire career, I kind of got interested in doing some side gigs and side jobs. And eventually that led me to do a full-time job as a hospital administrator. Then I went back to clinical for a while, full-time. And when I did that, I started a podcast and started blogging about non-clinical and non-traditional careers. So now I've got, I teach some courses online. I've got the podcast for almost up to 300 episodes. And I have a couple of masterminds going for those looking for a non-clinical job. And I created NewScript, which is a membership site with a partner by the name of Tom Davis, who I think you know. Mm-hmm. And so it keeps me pretty busy.
Yeah, sounds like it. And for the listeners, Dr. Jerica here was probably the first, I think, physician podcast I listened to and really got me going on my non-clinical kind of side gigs and things along the way. So John's a real mentor of mine, so I really, really love having him on the show. But today we're going to take a little bit of a different approach, and we're going to talk about side gigs or non-clinical careers, that can be obtained either right after residency or without doing a residency at all. And I know you mentioned prior to us starting here that there is a little bit of overlap there. So, John, I'll just let you get to it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. There, for a variety of reasons, there are many dozens, hundreds and hundreds of physicians who either completed medical school and either choose or are unable to find a residency or choose not to do it. And there's also residents who say, well, you know, I'm going to tough it out. Maybe when my residency is done, I think I'm going to see if that works out and then do clinical. But what happens is, what I've heard many people tell me is they were burned out in med school. And then during residency, they just became more burned out and they're just not going to do it. So it's an entirely reasonable thing to do. After all, most of us anyway, choose our career when we're like children, basically. We're in our teens or we're in grammar school even. We're going to be a doctor, you know, we're good in school, we get good grades. And it's not uncommon when you get through with medical school or residency, you may find that it wasn't really aligned with your values, your skills, your personality, and things like that. So what most people think when they finish residency or med school, they have no idea that there are things that they could be doing right now without spending the next 5 or 10 years in practice or more that will use basically 70 to 80% of what they've learned so far in medical school and residency and expound on that. And there's just this whole world of jobs out there. And there's thousands of jobs that are waiting for physicians. They have names like medical director, assistant medical director, associate medical director, chief medical officer, chief medical information officer. You know, so those are jobs that, you know, some other person with an MBA or a nursing degree can't do. So there's several, you know, fields that those mostly fall into. But there's a few that I've come across over the last 5 or 6 years as I've been doing the podcast primarily, where these things just lined up really well with physicians who either just finished residency or actually didn't even attend a residency. So if you'd like, I could pick one and get into that right now, Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really curious. So let's start with one.
You know, I have a spiel. I've done several presentations on this topic, but I'm going to start with the one that I don't talk about that often. And I'll be honest that I'm not the world's expert on this, but I want to bring it up because I think there are so many opportunities. And it's so logical for someone who's, especially someone who has completed their residency, and that's a job in informatics. Now, I have talked to informaticists before and medical informaticists, and, you know, they don't have to have a computer background. They just have to have an interest. I mean, let's face it, you, when you're working, Andrew, you know how to use an EMR. Hopefully, you know how to optimize it. You know how to build protocols in it. Or if you don't, there's some other clinician that helps you do that. And so there are massive jobs, and but the people I've talked to in the past usually are working at a health system, and they're helping to implement an EMR. Now, we've gotten through the implementation in most systems. You know, most have settled on Epic or the other one of the other top three or four, you know, the Cerner or the Meditech. But what I would advise those who are at the end of their residency and they're thinking about doing something, if they have any interest in informatics, computer science, decision support is something it will sometimes see as adjacent to that. I would go ahead and look at some jobs online, go right to the websites for Epic and Cerner. I guess it's called Oracle Cerner now because there was a merger, and Meditech, and just see what kind of job descriptions you can find. And I think you'll find that they don't require a physician to have, you know, a lot of extensive background in, again, these decision support or computer science. Honestly, what they really need is physicians who have used the systems and have learned how to optimize them and are willing to teach others how to do it. That's what informaticists do to a large extent, but there's also a lot of other opportunities. So I guess that would be my first recommendation for those that have completed residency. And even for those that maybe just finished med school, they might take a look at it, but the resident graduates are going to have a lot more experience working with the EMRs.
Yeah, that's a good one. I know there's a lot more master's programs now in medical informatics and not full degrees even, but certificates and all kinds of stuff that have been popping up that I've been seeing lately. And I know I see jobs for Epic posted all the time, just kind of perusing through LinkedIn. So
yeah, that's why I didn't want to skip that one. And you bring up a really good point, you know, because everyone's like, well, do I need to go back and get another degree? Do I need to get a master's in business or something? Or, you know, again, computer science or something? No, just sometimes doing just a certificate in some aspect of that job, it shows two things. Number one, you get some new skills you didn't have before. And then the second thing is it shows your commitment, you know, and that might be the thing that gets you over that first hurdle to be hired before someone else is hired. So that's a very awesome tactic to keep in mind.
Yeah. And I have a friend of mine who is actually not an Epic builder, a physician Epic builder. I know they have a course. And so he's like risen quite high in his hospital system because he can actually code in Epic because he had interest in it. So there's all kinds of stuff.
Well, yeah, and then the sky's the limit. If you can get into a hospital system, you know, let's say you learn some of this stuff at Epic, and then you eventually segue into a hospital system, you know, a chief medical information officer is a major part of many hospitals and hospital systems. It's an extremely lucrative job. And not only does it pay well, but it's just very interesting. You're a senior management, basically. So I've talked to several of those people, and it's just, you know, some of us don't want to be in the hospital anymore, but if you're not against that, and obviously if you go into informatics, that's where most of the work is. So there's some great long-term opportunities.
Yeah, that's a great one. All right, John, what's the next one?
Let's see. I don't know. I guess I'd like to mention consulting. It's kind of an open-ended term. And a lot of people that you and I talk to about consulting have started their own consulting businesses, but that's not really what I'm talking about. I'm talking about working for a national or an international consulting firm. You know, those jobs, they do hire experienced physicians, but they sometimes are looking for someone with less experience. And from what I was told by one of the people I interviewed about this, he said basically for some types of consulting jobs at Accenture or McKinsey or BCG or even IBM has a big healthcare consulting arm, they don't want a physician with too much experience because they've learned a lot of bad habits. That's what they told me. So they will hire people right out of their residency. You already have all the clinical background you need. You got, you know, experience with the systems, and you're, you know, the healthcare system itself probably almost as well as a seasoned physician. You know, maybe you haven't been exposed as much to the billing and coding aspects of it as, let's say, someone who's been in practice. But oftentimes they'll take someone right out of residency and sometimes even straight out of medical school. And you know, the thing I would say about that too, since I brought up and we kind of talked about the difference, I look at someone with an MD basically to be equivalent to somebody with a PhD. So you'll see in a lot of these job descriptions, whether it's consulting or in pharma, which maybe we can talk about, or in informatics, they're talking, you know, about somebody that has, you know, certain background, the medical degree, and sometimes a little bit extra in terms of maybe some exposure to clinical trials if it's in pharma or in consulting. It'll depend on what kind of consultant we're talking about. There's so many variations of consulting, and whether it's starting new service lines in a hospital in particular, technology, biotech. I mean, it's just all kinds of things that are being implemented, and they need someone as a consultant to come in and show them how to do it. So any additional experience, either as an undergrad, as a master's level, or even things you did in medical school can make you very attractive. And then that applies also if you've been in residency, you know, and I suppose we could say if you've done a 1-year fellowship somewhere too, that brings you even closer to some particular field where you may have expertise that some of the others in that chain there between med school and residency don't have. But there's certainly tons. Now, to do those kinds of national and international consulting company jobs, it's obviously you're employed and you don't have the risk of starting your own business, obviously, and doing that. But it can require some travel. So that can be something to consider when thinking about pursuing that kind of job.
Yeah, it's a good one. I know McKinsey particularly really wants people as early as they can get them. I think they have like a fellowship or a summer program that takes people between like their third and fourth year, something like that. So they want people in medical school that are going to finish medical school, come out with a degree, but then go right to McKinsey. So there's all kinds of stuff like that if for people that don't plan on going to residency. I know that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like you've had more exposure to that part than I have. I do know that, as I said, you know, that level, but there's some jobs, you know, I don't want the people listening to think that, well, let's say they're mid-career or something or approaching retirement. There's some really good jobs for them as well, but it has to be in something that's really involves and requires an understanding of the day-to-day practice of medicine, perhaps, or actually working in the hospital environment for a number of years. So it's one that a lot of people just don't really think about when they're thinking about a non-clinical job.
True, true. All right. Got anything else?
Yeah, let's hit pharma real quick here.
Sure.
The classic is medical science liaison. That one is available to anybody from medical school, residency grad, early career, mid-career, late career. It's very popular with those who have just completed medical school because there are a lot of examples of successful people who have made that transition. But having said that, I've talked to physicians at all phases of their career and having successfully made that transition. It's very popular. A lot of people want to get into pharma one way or the other. You could also try going as a medical monitor, but the thing that's nice about the MSL is there isn't really any certification you can get. And that's a kind of a positive. In other words, you don't need a special degree. If you happen to have some exposure during undergrad or graduate school with research or, you know, clinical studies, I mean, that can be helpful, but I've talked to many doctors that haven't had that and they were able to get a job as an MSL. You know, for that one, I think the big thing is just to join the Medical Science Liaison Society and start learning what you can. They are a society that's mostly out there for, you know, MSLs have been working for a while, but they spend some time on educating prospective MSLs. And so that can be very helpful. They have a board certification, but it's not for those that have never done it. That's for those that have already been in the field. And the thing is, when you become an MSL, you'll have the exposure then to the medical affairs division of pharmaceutical company. And then you'll start to see that there are other types of positions that you might want to shoot for. And so, yeah, someone with residency training is right up their alley, particularly someone might have a year or two of fellowship as well, because one of the things that really makes a big deal in getting a pharma job is just having a little bit more expertise than the average doctor in a given therapeutic class of meds or, you know, a new medication that's been released. If you have that, that kind of gives you the in to try and find one of these jobs in pharma.
Hey, guys. We're going to take a quick break from today's episode to talk about today's sponsor, FlipMD. FlipMD is a competitive marketplace where physicians can source and secure consulting side gigs. Jobs come from a broad range of clients across all major industries who are looking for medical experts in their field. FlipMD allows physicians to pick and choose the consulting work that fits their schedule and their interests, so you can continue to provide quality patient care while exploring new opportunities. And here's the coolest part. You get to set the parameters for your work, including an hourly rate. So join the thousands of physicians who are diversifying their income streams and expanding their careers with FlipMD. With FlipMD, you can pick up consulting work when you are available, try out a non-clinical career, or even do something completely outside the realm of patient care. FlipMD is a centralized source of well-paying side gigs that will help build your physician brand. Join now and see why physicians are joining every day. Visit flip-md.com. Again, that's flip-md.com. Now, back to our show. Yeah, no, I know pharma is really, really popular with people that either are done after residency or don't even want to start one. And I think a lot of it's kind of maybe the nice thing is that when you're starting at the ground level in these pharma companies, you've got a lot of people have really meteoric rises to high levels, but it takes some time to kind of build up to the practicing physician salaries, is my understanding, when you're coming in kind of as a, I guess, an entry level pharma person. Is that right?
Yeah. In fact, you can go on and look up the MSLS, the Medical Science Liaison Society. They do a survey every year or two. And so they'll actually list the salary levels they get from their survey. And yeah, if someone coming in straight out of med school or even out of residency, it's going to be on the lower end for sure. But, you know, it's like anything. You got to expect that. I mean, someone who's an experienced physician is always going to, you know, pull a bigger salary in almost anything they do, because to pull that person out of clinical to do these jobs, you got to pay them more to begin with just because it's a commensurate level of salary. So, but yeah, the thing is, pharma companies, I mean, some are small, but most of them are middle to very massive companies. There's a lot of room for growth. And usually when you get in there and you've demonstrated your ability, you've worked hard, you've shown your expertise, the fact that you can continue to learn and grow, then you might shift into learning more about management. And then, you know, then the sky's the limit. It's like, you know, working in a hospital, just working your way up through those different levels.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think these are great so far. So informatics, we talked about consulting, we've talked about pharma. I know you can hit me with them all day long. How many more you want to talk about? How about two more? You want to do two more?
Let's do two more. Okay.
All right. Let's do it.
So we'll throw out medical writer. You know, that's a common one that people think about right away, because there isn't really any barrier to being a writer. It's just a matter of being a good writer to begin with, knowing what you're doing, and picking a subspecialty within writing. Do you want to be a technical writer, which again can work for a pharma company or what's called a contract research organization? Do you want to do educational writing, or you know, even putting programs together? And that brings you into the CME realm, or CE for other clinicians. You can do journalistic writing, where you're reporting on, you know, recent news for physicians and other clinicians, or for the public. And you can educate the public, for that matter, and, you know, work for a, you know, might be called a communications company, medical communications company that deals with patient education. There's a lot of, there's at least, I don't know, 600 CME companies in the country. They, some of, most of those hire medical writers. The, you know, thing about being a medical writer is you really got to like it. It takes a while to build up a portfolio, unless you're going to do it as an employee. You can get a job as a technical writer for pharma. And so you don't have to worry about, you know, building up a clientele or a panel of publishers or editors that use, you know, your work. But it's something that you can start while you're part-time. So, I mean, even if you're in the middle of your residency, a lot of times that third year does slow down a little bit. And if you're really thinking you want to do something different, of course, you should be preparing at that point anyway. But if you're going to do the medical writing side, you can actually start writing and start submitting manuscripts. You can start building relationships with publishers, particularly if you're doing it as a freelancer, or you can look for one of the other jobs. And usually if you start like that and give it a full year, you'll at least hit the ground running when you finish your residency.
Yeah, that's a great one. I mean, I know some residents that started dabbling when they were in residency, and now either have transitioned to doing it a lot of the time, or are able to do part-time work because of it, or found that they just love it. I personally don't know how to use a comma, so it's not a job for me. But
you know, it's I can't believe one. It, but I've been an editor basically for a CME company for almost 20 years, and I still, it's just part-time. You know, I get about 20 manuscripts a year that I look at, and I review them for, you know, their content, and, you know, I make changes when they're needed, and it's another source of income. So, but it's something you can definitely do full-time. You have to be very disciplined, though, when you're doing that, particularly as a freelancer, but I think a lot of physicians are pretty disciplined.
Yeah, I would say so. Not us crazy ER docs, but maybe some of the other specialties.
You guys are off on some tangent. Show up for your shift, go home.
Okay. No,
that's how my urgent care thing is, you know, or was till I stopped doing it. But yeah, love that shift work.
Yeah, okay. That is nice. Should we do one more? Let's do it, John. Hit me with the last one.
Oh, let's see. I guess what I would say is, and this kind of seems related to the writing thing, but there's a whole industry called medical communications, which sounds a lot like medical writing. But usually when you're doing this, we're talking about working for an advertising agency, a marketing agency, and they will have teams of with one or two physicians and a bunch of support staff, writers and marketers and social media experts. And basically they're promoting things. Usually it's going to be a pharmaceutical company and its drugs. And you can get, I've heard of those right out of med school getting a job as like an assistant or associate medical director in a medical communication company. Definitely with residency. And especially, again, if you have knowledge about a certain class of drugs, then there are going to be teams, you know, waiting, looking for someone to be the medical director or associate medical director. And basically you're kind of, in a way, the conscience of that team, meaning that they need to obviously stick within the FDA's, you know, package insert or the guidelines for a given drug, but they somehow have to balance that with their marketing efforts. And of course, we've all been subject to some of those marketing efforts and we don't always enjoy it, but but it's a necessary evil. You know, you've got to get knowledge about new drugs and new classes of drugs out there. And the quicker you do, the more appropriate patients are going to be found, and the more, you know, illness you're going to improve or deaths you're going to avoid. And so it can be very rewarding, but it's medical communications. I usually advise people that if they want to look at something like this, they should go to the MM&M Agency Solar System. Look it up as an image. It's actually a slide I put in one of my presentations that I've talked about on the podcast before, and it lists about over 100 different medical communications companies. A lot of times they will be aligned with a particular drug or in a particular pharma company, but then they move around when, you know, things come into vogue and then out of vogue. And so they're constantly taking on new products. So if you just look up MM&M, which it doesn't stand for anything really, that's the name of the publication, MM&M Agency Solar System, you'll find this list, and it'll have all these different sites, and you can go and look at them, see if they're located near where you live or not, depending on whether you're able to move to a new area to work. And you'll be able to actually go to their websites and do some job searching there.
Perfect. Yeah, that's not one I know very much about. So glad you mentioned the medical communication. So that was great, John. I think that'll be really helpful for either people who I just had it either before residency or after residency. There's lots of options. So really check out all of John's stuff to learn more. But that kind of leads us into the next segment where let's talk a little bit about NewScript and an upcoming offering that you guys are going to do.
All right. I'd love to talk about that. So, another physician by the name of Tom Davis and I got together 6 or 7 years ago and started something called Clinicians Cooperative, which no longer exists, but that was morphed into NewScript. And NewScript is a community of clinicians. So we are targeting both physicians and non-physicians. So nurses, APNs, PAs, PharmDs, podiatrists, dentists, anyone who's really been in the system and has had, I don't know, it's just been kind of crushed or somewhat abused by the nature of our healthcare system. It's also open to anyone that just wants to look at different ways to balance their life, to address burnout, to get past, you know, some of those struggles and maybe find a new career and a new new way to use your clinical skills rather in a non-clinical way. It's kind of like a Facebook lookalike. It doesn't have any ads. It's private. You can be anonymous if you want to be anonymous. We have about 600 members in there now. We also have a dozen or more what we call mentors who are experts in basically in addressing burnout and in career transition. And so really our goal is to inspire and encourage and instruct people, physicians and other clinicians, you know, how to make that transition if they feel that's what they want out of their professional life. So as part of that, we're always trying to come up with new ways to help our followers and our members. I should mention that right now there's a monthly charge for the membership. We first 300 people we invited in for free. And then once we got going, we thought, well, we're going to charge a little bit to help support it. But given that, the mentors and Tom and I got together and thought we should take all this knowledge and information that we have and skills and put on a free summit. So we decided to proceed with a free summit, which we're holding from April 11th to April 13th in the evening, 4 lectures and Q&A sessions per evening for 3 evenings. So it's 12 sessions. We're covering a lot of the sort of the topics we talked about a little bit today and many others. And there is also the ability to purchase the recordings if you want. But mainly, we want to just get more information, support, and encouragement to clinicians in general to get out there and look and understand that there's a whole world of other things you can do with all of your expertise and experience and training.
Yeah, I love it, especially the price tag. You know, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. I love this thing is, you know, there've been summits around for a few years now and it's just so much fun. I've attended many free summits, you know. It's like you go, you can watch what you want to watch and listen. It's all, you know, it's video and audio, and we decided to make it live. A lot of summits are recorded, and there's a lot of advantages to doing that, particularly for the people putting it on. But we thought, well, we want to have it live because we want our mentors and our faculty. We have a few non-mentor faculty, and just be able to then do a Q&A, because really, you really almost learn more in the Q&A session than you do during the actual formal presentation. So we're going to do it. It's going to be 3 days of nightmarish technological challenges, but we're going to do it, and it's going to be fun. We're absolutely committed to making it fun and very useful for clinicians who want to participate.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you know, for the listeners, you're getting a ton of free information from all the, you know, a whole bunch of experts out there, and you can ask them whatever you want. I mean, you really can't beat that. And for those of the people that can't attend, will there be a recorded option?
Yeah, there'll be recordings, and we're also having some extra bonuses for those that want to purchase the recordings. So, and the thing is, well, if they're interested, they'll, you know, they'll find this out, but there'll be very, the cost to get the recordings, if you do it before it all starts, is like $19. I mean, it's dirt cheap. So if you can't even make it, it's worth paying the $19 just to get the 12 hours of teaching. But that's what will happen. Yep.
I'll say. So if people are interested in signing up for the summit, they can go to andrewtisserdo.com/summit. And that'll be in the show notes, but andrewtisserdo.com/summit. And all the information you'll need to sign up will be right there. And I know if I'm not working those nights, I'll be popping in, because you never can get enough of this stuff.
No, I mean, well, you and I, of course, we're always looking for new information to find out, you know, where our colleagues can go if they start to feel the need to do a side gig or something, you know, even more full time. But yeah, it's fun. It's something that there's a big need for. And so I think it'll be a great time.
Yeah, I think so too, John. You guys are always putting together such great things, so love following your work. We're not going to have time to do a whole breakdown of the guests like we usually do, but we've done that twice already. So maybe if you could give us one book recommendation and one single piece of advice for the early career physician, that'll be good to have.
Okay, a book. There's a book that was put out by the American Association for Physician Leadership, and it's by Sylvie Stacy. And to paraphrase it, it's 50 non-clinical careers for physicians. I'm not sure if that's the exact, but, you know, for those that are looking for, you know, the non-clinical, whether it's after med school, residency, fellowship, or beyond pre-retirement, that book has a list of actually about 60 or 70 different jobs. So it's one place where you're going to find out a lot of information, and there's some information on how to apply for those jobs too. So I'm supporting Sylvie Stacy's book because I love it. You said an advice for those who are thinking about
just any advice for the early career physician.
The early career physician. Okay. Yeah, it's been a while since I've been early career, but I would say that there's some things that I remember from when I was early career. Number one is to really make sure you've got a mentor or two around, because let's face it, when you come out of residency, you still need about another 2 or 3 years of ongoing support until you really feel comfortable. At least that's the way it was for me and other people I talk to now. So you just need to make sure. Sometimes they're built in if you're in a group practice or you're working, you know, an ER and you have a large group that you're part of. But really find somebody that you can bounce things off of on a regular basis. And it's not just about the clinical. It could be about how to, you know, manage politics in a hospital, or could be contract issues, you know, so find someone. And the other thing is, really be aware of, you know, how you're being treated by the bigger system. I know, you know, you and I talk to so many physicians who just sort of wake up one day and go, gosh, you know, I really hate my job, and it's been 10 years, and I guess I've hated it for a long time. And I hope you don't hate your job as a new grad in the early career. And there are some great organizations to work for, and I think that's the key. We found that in looking at those who are happy versus who aren't too happy with their jobs, it almost always boils down to the culture at the organization. So you definitely want to find an organization with a great culture. And one of the corollaries of that is most of the ones that are really good and high quality have a lot of physicians in leadership positions. So I guess that might be my other bit of advice when you're looking to see if there's a lot of physician input and, you know, a CMO and CMIO and medical directors and all kinds of things like that if you're in a big corporate environment to help keep things on track.
Yeah, that's great. I know probably the best organization I ever worked for had a physician CEO, and it was night and day, honestly.
Yeah, see? So keep something to keep in mind.
That's a great one. Well, thank you, John, as always. In addition to the summit, if people want to check you out and find your stuff, how can they find you?
That's at nonclinicalphysicians.com.
Awesome. Well, John, pleasure as always. Thank you for coming back on the show, and I'm really looking forward to that summit.
Hey, Andrew, it's been my pleasure, and I really appreciate you having me back on and allowing me to kind of spill my guts here today and talk to your audience. So thanks a lot. Hope to see you again soon.
Likewise.
What an awesome show with Dr. John Jerica, as usual. John's podcast was really one of my first, and I would recommend everyone checking out the Nonclinical Career podcast. Additionally, please check out andrewtisserdo.com/summit for the summit we mentioned in the interview. It's bound to be a great event, free of charge, so everyone go check it out right away. The other thing I'd like you to do after listening is follow me on LinkedIn to search my name. I'm most active on that platform these days. Thank you again for listening, and as always, keep talking.
All opinions expressed by the guest in this episode are solely the guest's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, or any affiliates thereof. The guest's opinions are based upon information he or she considers reliable, but Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, nor any affiliates thereof warrant its completeness or accuracy. The guest, Andrew Tisser DO, TalkToMe.LLC, or any affiliates thereof are not under any obligation to update or correct any information provided in this episode. The guest statements and opinions are subject to change without notice.